It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We're off and running. It's a minute past the hour on this, the 15th day of May, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go to pick up the stream. It plays automatically in some instances. I think you have to actually make it go on your mobile device or whatever. But the bulletproof stream is there, and we are running hot and true and on course on both streams, according to Brother Deacon Asa. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. BT Blom, I hope you're hearing the program, because the third switch has been prone, yes. And for this, the 15th day of May, 2018. We have thank yous to send out. Oh, yes, we do. Thanks going out to Darlene in Connecticut, our Connecticut subscriber. Thanks going out to Timothy. I don't have an address for Timothy, but thank you, Timothy. Thank you very kindly to Jim in Spain. And thanks very kindly to Robert in California. Those are our sustaining subscribers for the 15th day of the month over on PayPal. If you would like to be a subscriber, it's very easy. It'll set you back, you know, helping to keep this on the air for everybody who wants to listen. It'll set you back all of less than one half of one McDonald's hamburger, no cheese, per day. And, well, I have to say that knowing, you know, I remember Super Size Me, and I remember what a month of eating McDonald's did to Morgan Spurlock. And so, consequently, it'd probably be good for you. But just go over to HeadOn.live, click on the PayPal button, and check that little box that says make this a recurring donation, and bang, there you go. And it'll, I'm sure Darlene and Timothy and Robert and Jim would love to have the company of another subscriber on this, the 15th day of the month. If you prefer that it all come out on the first of the month, that your subscription come out over there, then just head on .live and click on the Patreon button. And right now we've got just a little more than one broadcast day per month covered via the Patreon subscribers. So if you'd like to do it that way, then, you know, it comes out on the first of the month, easy, set it, forget it. And heck, you won't even get billed until the first day of June, which is some 16 days away. We're at the midpoint of the month of May, and we find ourselves down by $325 in fundraising for the evening. 32 and a half people, that half person's always a problem. I don't cipher well anyway. But we need to raise $325 because the bills are the bills you have, we have always with us. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that the the program, you know, stays on the air via your good graces. Goodness gracious sakes alive. Our buddy Jim has showed up in the chat room. Welcome to the chat room, Jim. Enjoy yourself. That's Jim here in West Virginia, not Jim in Spain. We've apparently got a fraternity of Jims too. So I'll have to bear that in mind. So anyway, we get $325 to raise this evening, and not counting what happened on Friday, because our buddy Andy knocked down a whole bunch of that, or a big chunk of that. He knocked down Thursday, and he knocked down a chunk of Friday. So we won't count Friday. And it's nice just to have covered the ground that Andy helped us cover with his annual lump subscription. Thank you, Andy. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. And again, thanks to our four subscribers for this day. And, you know, if we knock down the fundraising goal for today, then I shut up about fundraising for the rest of the program. Beautiful, huh? Well, it would be. So we'll see how it plays out. I want to share a couple of notes with you, and I do this in all sincerity and in all. I'm not gooning on anybody. I'm not offering critiques one way or the other. But the fact of the matter is, you know, yesterday I spent the opening hour of the program talking about the outpouring of blood, anguish, and grief in occupied Gaza. And it remains for me an international shame that it is that Gaza is the world's largest open-air concentration camp. And I offer these two competing points of view not to create conflict, but to show the divergence of opinion that surrounds this issue. And the fact that in this country, and I find this part interesting because there are much more vigorous and heated debates about Israel's place in the world and Israel's conduct of itself within Israel than, frankly, we can engage in the United States. Because invariably, when you talk about Israel in the United States, somebody's going to be unhappy. Because you have to wholly condemn, it seems, one side or the other, and it is insufficient to say a pox on both their houses in regard to the ongoing horrors and tragedy that obtain over there. So first, a note from Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. What guts it took to speak out to condemn Israel and Netanyahu, the devil himself, and the U.S. for the hideous attack on the Palestinians yesterday, Bob. You're a treasure, a voice of reason and compassion that the Horn family must protect with the financial support you are so worthy and deserving of. And I thank you for those kind words, Terry. And I don't mean to. It wasn't a blanket condemnation of Israel. Israel exists, and I support Israel's right to exist peacefully with its neighbors. Right now, it's the peaceful part that's the problem. And I have an abiding fear, an abiding sense that there is a Palestinian genocide underway, and that we are bearing largely silent witness to it. There are 2 million people in Gaza, the highest single concentration of human beings on the face of Earth. Humanity is more concentrated in Gaza than it is in Manhattan, or Beijing, or Tokyo, or even Mexico City. And of the 2 million people in Gaza, two-thirds of them are under 25. That's babes in arms all the way up to the 25-year-olds. And that means under normal circumstances and life expectancies, they're probably going to be around on this planet longer than most of the population of Earth. And that means if the problems that attend them are not solved, and if their life on Earth is not somehow improved, and if peace is not both sought and found, we're not talking about a problem in 2018. We're talking about a problem in 2090 that's going to continue to get bigger and worse and badder and more agonizing. But thank you, Terry, for your kind words. By the way, Terry asks, Terry has been a subscriber, and just maybe the best way for you to go about it, Terry, would be to go over and use the Patreon campaign, because Terry was a subscriber on the 29th, and invariably, February comes along every year and it screws everything up at PayPal. And so, consequently, maybe that is the better approach, Terry. That way, it all comes out on the first of the month. But thank you again for all your kind words. Terry says, it was so great to have you back tonight. I really miss you when you have to be away. Condolences on the loss of your auntie. Thank you very, very much, Terry. Signed, Terry, in the People's Republic of Amherst, where, I will add, only the H is silent. So I will contrast that with a note I got from another dear friend, Andy, who refers to himself as Andy the Angry Jew. You know how much I love you, man, but I have to say that I don't think you present an equal side of that story, Israel. I'm not saying that it's clear-cut either way, but you should know that decades ago, Arafat refused to sign an agreement with Israel. I'm sure that you know that a lot of this is a smokescreen because the Palestinians have been offered an agreement many times, but have refused. How can you make peace when your opposition won't you wiped off the face of the earth? I'm not religious, says Andy, but I do stand for my faith, especially for all those people who lost their lives in the Holocaust. Bob, nobody in the world wants us. Talking about Jews on earth, in the world. Read the book Exodus by Leon Uris. I have, a very long time ago. Just saying that there are two sides to the story, and most of the time I hear you sticking up for the Palestinians. If I'm wrong, please correct me by email or on the air. If I'm sticking up for the Palestinians, it's because the Palestinians have rocks, and the Israelis have precision-guided munitions courtesy of the people of the United States. This is not to say that the situation would be better if the United States equally armed both sides and said, root hog or die, tough hide lasts the longest, because that's no answer either. War, however it is waged, and in whatever disproportionate measure, is not an answer. You'll note that there were, the death toll from yesterday in Israel has climbed past 60 now. It is past five dozen. Or, to use an older numerical term, it has passed the three score mark. Another 20, and we'll call it an Abraham Lincoln. It'll be four score. But three score human beings had the universe end for them yesterday. 2,400 others were wounded. Do you know why the news stories didn't have any accounts of how many Israelis were wounded? Because they weren't. The most they possibly could have gotten was a bump or a scratch from an absolutely not particularly aimed rock. Some may have had some breathing difficulties from the burning tires. But it was, and understand the Irish, the Belgians, the Germans, the British, I think, the French, all noted that, and you know, hell, Turkey recalled, this is not the Turkey Defense Hour, there's no love lost between me and Tayyip Erdogan. Turkey recalled its ambassador, and that means something because Israel has a close relationship. You wouldn't think about it, but they do. They got a close relationship with Turkey. Other countries called the Israeli ambassadors in to give them a good talking to. And the word you saw repeated most often was disproportionate. And it did. To me, with a historian's eye view, it looked like a slaughter and a blood sacrifice for the opening of the Donald J. Trump Memorial Embassy and Bullseye. Earlier today, I saw an editorial cartoon over on Facebook, courtesy of our friend Joy. It showed the Dove of Peace shot dead, laying bleeding in front of the door of our new Israeli, of our new Israel embassy in Jerusalem, which need not be there. Flavio has chimed in. Flavio says, "You anti-Semite! You're not an anti-Semite for condemning Israeli crimes. I'm old enough to remember when only the U.S. and Israel would side with South Africa at the U.N. Think about that. The U.S. and Israel siding with the apartheid regime against the world. I know. And then there was something else that happened today in New York at the United Nations. Now, let's understand the purpose of the United Nations is to talk so as to avoid shooting. Okay? Can we just agree on that as a wee little thumbnail description of what we expect the United Nations to do? The motivating theory being that if we can get together and talk our problems out, maybe we won't have to slaughter a few million people. All right. So there we were, trying to talk through our problems in the United Nations, where the UN ambassador is Nimrata Haley, whose name isn't really Nikki. She operates under a pseudonym. She also is being touted as having 2020 ambitions, should it prove that Donald J. Trump is not up to the task of running for re-election. Maybe we'll get to that later. But the purpose of the United Nations is for us to sit and talk and sort out our differences. Well, it's kind of hard to do that when people walk out of the conversation for political reasons. Okay? Now, this is the same Nimrata Haley who is so goddamn dumb, who is so ever-loving stupid, that she was duped by the morning zoo crew from Moscow 98.7 into thinking that she was talking to the president of Poland and agreed with them that there was an island nation called Bonomo. Yes, that Nikki Haley. I don't know why that story got buried. I don't know why it was so thoroughly underreported, but it was. That Nikki Haley. But a meeting was called in the UN Security Council, an emergency meeting, to discuss the slaughter in Gaza. By the way, there were children killed in that slaughter. One of them was 8 months old. The tally of those wounded has risen to 3,100. So with 60 dead, including an 8-month-old child, Nimrata Haley stood before the UN the previous day and praised Israel for the restraint that it exercised in only slaughtering 60 people who were largely defenseless, including an absolutely defenseless 8-month-old Palestinian child. That was restraint. And this was something that was echoed by the regime, who said that it was those Palestinians' fault for getting in front of those innocent Israeli bullets. No kidding. But Nimrata Haley, and this is where it begins to get awfully damn dangerous, said that Hamas, with the connivance of Iran, were the actors who were responsible for the violence. Let's check in.
Make no mistake, Hamas is pleased with the results from yesterday. I asked my colleagues here in the Security Council, who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would. No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has.
That's some restraint. No mention there of the fact that some of those people killed and wounded were killed and wounded by, you know, snipers. Larry says, if the Israelis would have had so much as one scratch on one person, it would have been all over the news, superseding all the deaths and injuries on the other side. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that the United Nations has a permanent observer. This is a person clothed with the authority, such as it is, that the United Nations has, to be beholden and report and responsible directly to the United Nations. And the permanent observer of Palestine to the United Nations is Riyad Mansour. And acting in an official capacity, Riyad Mansour delivered a report on what had happened. And so in this body, where the purpose is to talk through our problems, when the official observer of Palestine began to speak, Nimrata Haley, idiot, and apparently extremely rude person, got up and walked out in a huff. No, no kidding. She did. She was not going to sit there and listen to something as odious to her darling Republican ears as facts. The White House, of course, via Raj Shah, the pinch-hit utility spokes creep, when Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags is not up to the job, showed up behind the podium and said that all the slaughter in Gaza, the killings, the woundings, the maimings, were, and this is a quote, if you can stomach it, an unfortunate propaganda attempt perpetrated by Hamas. No kidding. Yeah, those were propaganda bullets. And I guess Hamas paid the Israeli soldiers who, I can't wrap my head around that kind of abject, mendacious madness. So, that's where the subject stands. But I want to thank both Terry and Andy for sending a long correspondence that was not inflammatory, that was an earnest attempt to engage in dialogue and discussion. Andy later responded and said, "You see a lot of things most don't, especially the way the Arab world treated the Palestinians. Thank you for that." Because historically speaking, there is a rich abundance of blame to go around. I remember when the late, great Bart Kopp said that this would all be so much easier if one or the other sides had said, "Hey, you know what? Give us a piece of ground anywhere on the face of the earth. We'll make it great. And we won't have to worry about our children being murdered over some sacred sand." Now, Andy says, "I will always opt for talking instead of fighting. I fight with Jewish people more than I do with others. I grew up in St. Louis, and let me tell you, the Jewish people there are so bigoted against blacks, and they cloak in other issues. Fortunately, I was raised by people who didn't see color. I'm very lucky." And at the end of the day, Andy says, "If the douchebag in chief hadn't certified the deal, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion." It's definitely a conflicting issue, for sure. And it is. You know, I want little 6-year-old Israelis to turn into little 7-year-old Israelis, and I want little 6-year-old Palestinians to become 7-year-old Palestinians. Or hell, at this point, I would have liked for that 8-month-old Palestinian to become a 9-month-old Palestinian. Or, you know, a Palestinian who could learn to walk. But the problem is that inside Israel, there is a hard right-wing core, you know, the so-called Likudniks, and there are people who think the Likudniks in the people. There are people in Israel who think the Likudniks are a bunch of sissy liberals who adopt the view of one Colonel John Chivington of the Sand Creek Massacre in Colorado, who once famously noted, upon being asked whether to kill indigenous women and children, "Kill them all, nits make lice." That quote is burnt into my brain because it is a manifestation of such abiding evil that it is, for me at least, impossible to forget. I remember, for instance, I remember when Barack Obama was beginning his first term, and Rahm Emanuel's father, you know, Rahm Emanuel was being brought into the administration. Rahm Emanuel's father said, he's going to be the chief of staff. It's not like he's some Arab washing the floors. Our great curse is ethnic bigotry. Note coming in from Steve in New York. I have to say, in your support, who does speak for the Palestinians, especially in this country? Malloy is dead on right about this. It's not about their lives are worth more than our lives or less Jewish people have died than Palestinian people. Let's not forget that the Palestinians live in occupied territory. They can't even come and go in their own country, so yeah, someone needs to speak for them. Far better when they can speak for themselves, but then when anyone does try to even speak neutrally about the situation, precious Nimrata Haley gets up and minces in a huff out of the meeting. And that is disgusting. Okay, I don't know about this. It was an act of Congress and a presidential act. Marty says, regarding that embassy, listening to Randy Rhodes, she was indicating that the building was not an embassy but a consulate. Need to check on Randy's sources of info to determine what truth that may or may there may or may not be there. John, meanwhile, says, subject line, Gaza, Israel. If the logic of Israel's right to exist was applied universally, the Cherokee, Inca, etc. would be claiming their rightful lands. Now, that's the problem with that benighted, miserable region of the planet. I mean, we can't get into the anthropology of it. It's just a mess. Abraham, for instance, before he got his name changed by God from Abram, if he was real, and for, you know, we're just for purposes of the discussion, we're going to. There was probably some guy, you know, this is how myths are built. There was probably some guy who relocated his family from what was known as Ur of the Chaldees to the Levant. Now remember, most of the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament, yeah, they weren't written by the lightning bolt finger of God. They were written, if you know your history, they were written by the priestly class of Israel and Judah in exile during the Babylonian captivity. And they were written as a template for an anticipated, wait a minute, rite of return. When the Babylonian captivity would be ended, and in fact, Cyrus the Great of Persia was the one who ended it, and a large number of the Hebrew people, because this is before, I believe, if I've got my timeline correct, this is before the split between the Kingdom of Israel and the Kingdom of Judah. But a great number of them left and went back, returned. In the 500s BCE. A lot of them stayed, however. and formed one of the ancient, one of the most ancient core groups of Jewishness that exist in uninterrupted fashion anywhere on earth. And they're there in Iran to this day. But the priestly class wrote Genesis, Leviticus, Exodus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy there in exile. And so they created what we referred, what we might think of in the modern era as a sort of comic book universe. You know, like the DC universe, the Marvel universe. And they created a universe in which a guy named Abram from Ur of the Chaldees got it in his head to go walkabout and took his family and moved over to Canaan. And that's the origin myth. And of course, there was a lot of backstory to that, Jacob and Esau and Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. Lots of questions there. You know, who did Cain and Abel marry if Adam and Eve were the first? I know. You're my sister. You're my sister. I had no idea that the banjo existed that far back in history. Ron in Raleigh, subject line, our staunchest ally. At the onset of the Six-Day War, the Israeli Air Force attempted to sink a U.S. Navy vessel, the USS Liberty. Over 200 American sailors were killed or wounded. The Israelis promptly lied about why it was done. Rachel Corey was run down by a D-9 cat driven by a member of the IDF. The investigation cleared Israel of any wrongdoing. A ship seeking to bring relief materials to Gaza was boarded in international waters by the IDF, and an American citizen was shot to death. Boarding a ship in international waters would be considered piracy if any other country had done it. Israel is a rogue nation abetted by the U.S. Earther says, those were Hamas crisis actors, Kincaid. Some were even seen in True Lies with that Schwarzenegger guy and Jamie Lee Curtis. Jim says at the UN, Nimrata Haley should have removed her Ferragamo pumps and started beating on the desk. Really? Well, you sure they weren't Jimmy Choo's or what's his name? What's his face? Louboutin? They're big these days. But yes, reminiscent of Nikita Khrushchev pounding on the podium with his shoe. And I always think about that brave Iraqi who threw a shoe at a dim leader. Honestly, who throws a shoe? Lee in New York says, there's plenty of blame on the embassy move. This act had broad support. Congress knew that moving the embassy was a problem, but they could show their love of Israel. After all, who would allow this action knowing the trouble it would cause? And that's the Jerusalem Embassy Act of 1995. Who was president then? Who could have vetoed that? Hey, it's another one of those thanks, Bill moments. Bless his heart, Bill Clinton gets a little less great every day, doesn't he? Larry pointing out, this is funny. Morning Blow called Haley a true conservative with her own values, aside from Trump's. LOL. I'm paraphrasing, but what a fool. I saw that. Did you see Raz in yesterday for Sarah Hasselbeck's sandbags? Every answer was, it was Hamas. No, it was Hamas. Could it be Hamas? Oh, it must be Hamas. Yeah, it was Hamas in the falafel shop with the rope. No, it would have to be with the Uzi. Yeah, Hamas in the rock. Hey, you've solved the game. Yes. Of course, I bring up Adam and Eve and Scott and Punky note. Eve was also noteworthy for being history's first computer operator. In one hand, she had an apple, and in the other, she had a wang. Oh, dear. Oh, we're going to go that. We're only 40 minutes into the program, Scott. Give a guy a chance. Lee says, subject line, Cain. Cain did not marry. Abel prevented that. I thought Cain slew Abel. I can't keep up with my mythology sometimes, I admit it. The work story, says Lee. My boss saw a coworker and me frequently bickering. He said, I bet when no one's around, you guys are like brothers. I replied, yeah, Cain and Abel. Isn't that right, Abel? Yeah. Bill in Allentown says, Adam and Eve, remember that Adam was the only man to give birth? Yes, and he gave birth to his kid's baby mama. I know. But, you know, if you can wrap your head around the talking snake, everything else is easy after that. And then Flavio reminds me of something that happened a while back when the Israeli Minister for Justice called for the genocide of the Palestinian people and got thousands of likes on Facebook for it. Ayet Shaked. She said, the entire Palestinian people are the enemy, including its elderly and its women, its cities and its villages, its property and its infrastructure. I mentioned Colonel Chivington a moment ago. Nits make lice. Well, Ayet Shaked referred to Palestinian babies as little snakes. So, yeah, it continues. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Bob, would you please have a program dedicated to discussing the difference between Zionism, Jews, Israel, and the origins of Zionism in Eastern Europe? Thanks. Signed, the management. LOL. Ugh. Well, I mean, they are very real, very different things. For a fact. And they're all tied up in European history. I love the work of Barbara Tuchman, Guns of August, Distant Mirror. And in particular in this regard, I highly recommend reading a book called Bible and Sword, which is particularly focused on the British fetishization of Israel before there was an Israel. Remember, this whole thing goes back to the Balfour Declaration and the partition, the post-World War I partition of what had up until then been the Ottoman Empire. And it was an opportunity, I understand what Todd's getting at, but I don't think we've got a fighting chance of going down that road. Arthur says, no, Cain was not Abel. Cain was on second, and Abel was Abel. God, we need a giggle. So, let's look at the flip side of all of this, shall we? Andy, in his note, said, no one has ever wanted us. Talking about Jews in the world. And that is a, you know, that's a sad statement. It's a tragic statement. It's also a statement that say, oh, and I'm not being critical, Andy. It's a statement that any number of indigenous peoples in the Americas could say. And in fact, yesterday when I was talking about having signs in, welcome signs in Virginia, welcome to Virginia, genocide begins here. I got a now hold your horses from Lauren, our correspondent up in far frozen Alberta. But speaking of far and frozen, I got a May 15th photo from our buddy Chris in the Northwest Territories. I mean, I joke and I kid and I carry on and stuff, but damn. A photograph from, you know, just today of the area in and around the far Northwest Territories. And damn, icicles hanging off roofs and still a dusting of snow. Interesting planet we live on. Interesting planet we're fucking up. But anyway, Lauren, in far Alberta, said, before you go claiming the first genocide for Virginia in the 1600s, check out the long-defunct Beothuk tribe, who were wiped out on Newfoundland. A few lasted, I think, until the 1800s. But the elimination started in the 1500s. Forgot about that. Sorry. We regret the error. More than that, I regret the genocide. And then, of course, there's the Vikings, who ran across the people they called the Skraelings. But gunpowder hadn't come along to Europe yet, and so it was a reasonably fair fight. And despite the fact that they were quite taken with Vinland, the Norse turned around and went the hell home, and presumably didn't come back, although one can imagine them fishing and stuff off the banks. For it was rich fishing ground then. And in their interaction with what they called the Skraelings, God only knows what kind of European diseases they passed on, so that the actual genocide may have started in the 11th century, and, you know, not the 15th or 16th. Diseases are funny that way. Ron in Raleigh says, it's funny, have you noticed that Israelis can engage in eliminationist rhetoric and no one says a mumbling word? You steal my land, kill my family and friends, I might be prone to wanting to kill your ass, just saying. Well, and there are very long memories in that corner of the world. But that's one of the fundamental truths that people fail to acknowledge about human life on planet Earth is that humanity, from the moment it became human, has almost constantly been in motion. No sooner did we quit running from the jackals and hiding in the trees, and than that little remnant band of about 2,300 or so humans got busy and got going. And several different migratory paths have been identified through research. But we're always moving. And almost unfailingly, those migratory impulses lead to grief. Because it seems inevitable that wherever it is that people want to go, there's someone else already there. And they tend to resent other folks wanting to live where they live. Immigration is actually a fairly civilized concept. The idea that we don't slaughter people just for wanting to live somewhere else for a variety of reasons, like rising sea levels or hordes of murderous Germanic tribes at their heels, who themselves are running or moving as a result of other pressures from people behind them. And as I've said before, we're not ready for the next round of it either. Kirsten Nielsen, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, testified in front of the Senate today. And it was a level of word salad almost worthy of Sarah Palin and the xenophobic rage Barbie Tommy Lauren. And the notion that and Claire McCaskill of all people, did a pretty good job of pinning her down and making her look stupid, pointing out all the places where we don't have government agents and literally thousands of openings for needed individuals in the Department of Homeland Security, and they keep sending people to the border. Because the bottom line is, we're only worried about a certain form, a certain type of immigrant. You know, brown ones. Because that's how we roll in Trump-merica. Our buddy Jordan, whom I talked with a couple of months back out in Montana, asked via Twitter earlier today, has anyone delved into John Kelly's "they're overwhelmingly rural people" statement? Because I thought we liked rural people. Remember the rural people who are the salt of the earth, MAGA people who are going to make America great again and suffering all that terrible, debilitating, crippling economic anxiety? Those rural people? It's the wrong rural people. Because, you know, in John Kelly's world, rural people don't have skills, which is to say, successfully, you know, until things like NAFTA destroyed farming culture in, say, the highlands of Guatemala, Honduras, and southern Mexico, successfully living from generation after generation after generation after generation in the face of genocide, I might add, doesn't involve a skill set. Right. So it obviously becomes a question of, well, I said only the right rural people, Jordan. Only the best rural people, to which Jordan responded. Sounds about white to me. Which is what it comes down to. Jim says, was it Casimir the Great of Poland who welcomed the Jews and they prospered fairly well until 1939? That sounds right, but you'd have to, I can't do the research on it, but yes. But see, that's the problem. There were periods of stability and sanity, and then there were periods of abject homicidal rage and hate. Kingdoms and principalities in Europe tended to like having Jewish communities because they could borrow money from them when they wanted to go and make war against another Christian prince or something like that. But eventually the "they killed Christ" bullshit would start up again and there would be an ejection. England did it. God knows Spain did it. During the Black Plague, the Black Death, 14th century, what, about 1348? When the papacy was sitting at Avignon, the Pope, such as he was, went so far as to say, stop saying that the plague is coming from the Jews poisoning the wells, because it's not. Quit it. Because there were a whole bunch of parish priests who were saying exactly that, and Jewish families were being slaughtered in their sleep. Then there's the blood libel, you know, where it was said that Jews used the blood of Christian babies to make their matzah, and that's why it had that funny little red tinge of color to it. Oh, good God. The hatefulness of Christianity. They could start atoning now and they wouldn't be done for 10,000 years. But these are the realities, and the problem is, and I understand what Andy's talking about when he says that the problems persist to this day, and regrettably, I have a perfect example. Here, then, is a radio, a robocall. Not a radio ad, but a robocall. That Los Angeles talk radio station KFI got hold of. These are calls going out to phone system, phone numbers, all over California. And they're in support of a Senate candidate named Patrick Little. Now, I'll warn you, this isn't ridiculous or funny. This is terrifyingly real and sickening. But this is California, okay? Remember California? You're nice and blue. The state that I've pointed to time and again and said, listen, after they've done the rest of us, they're coming for you and you're going to be all by yourselves. And I see nothing to prove me wrong in that regard. This character is running as a Republican for Senate in California. And God knows how many times this robocall has been received inside the state of California. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape. This is kind of pretty much as ugly as it gets.
Anne Feinstein isn't just a Jew. She's an Israeli citizen.
Wait, that can't be legal, right? I mean, she's a citizen of Israel, but gets to vote as a U.S. senator from California to send billions of our dollars every year to her real country, Israel?
It used to be illegal, but the Jews in our country got rid of that law.
Not only that, but she gets to vote America into Middle East wars, based on lies, so that Israel can eventually expand its borders, like it always planned.
To rid America of the traitorous Jews like Dianne Feinstein. Vote for Patrick Little for U.S. Senator from California by mail by May 29 or at the polls on June 5th. He's a patriot, a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, and he's vowed to end Jewish control over America, starting with Dianne Feinstein. an Israeli citizen pretending to be an American, while she takes our money for her real country, Israel, and kills our children for it, too. Vote for Patrick Little for U.S. Senator from California by mail by May 29, or at the polls on June 5th. He's going to get rid of all the nation-wrecking Jews from our country, starting with Israeli citizen Dianne Feinstein.
This message paid for by the RoadToPower.com.
That's not a joke. That's real. That is a dark money PAC ad in support of Patrick Little for U.S. Senate for California. But, you know, maybe if you're a Californian, you're saying, sure, we're always going to have those nut jobs out there. I mean, Jesus, you know, it's the price we pay for freedom of speech. And golly jeepers, I mean, most people aren't like that. And most people don't hold those views. Guess what? He's the top polling Republican Senate candidate in California. He refers to himself not as anti-Semitic, but counter-Semitic. Mm-hmm. He's a Holocaust denier. Openly praises the little murderer with the Charlie Chaplin mustache. And according to an April 27th Survey USA poll, Patrick Little got more support than any other Republican candidate running in California's Senate race. The only person he polled behind was Dianne Feinstein herself. He had 18% in the survey compared to Feinstein's 39%, and the nearest Republican behind him was at 8%. Meanwhile, the Republican Party in California is kind of flummoxed. They issued a statement saying, "Mr. Little has never been an active member of our party. I do not know Mr. Little. I am not familiar with his position." That was Matt Fleming, communications director for the California Republican Party. "But in the strongest terms possible, we condemn anti-Semitism and any other form of religious bigotry, just as we do with racism, sexism, or anything else that can be construed as a hateful point of view." You know, except supporting Donald fucking Trump! Patrick Little has the endorsement of, you know, just like Donald Trump, of former Grand Wizard of the KKK, David Duke. Patrick Little, in the past, has said, "There were concert halls, swimming pools, soccer fields, ice cream, and many other luxuries at Auschwitz." He referred to the murderous little pissant with the Charlie Chaplin mustache as one of the greatest leaders in history. And went on and said, "America will no longer be Israel's whore." And then said that Trump himself has caved to the Jewish supremacists who control this country. Survey USA wrote after they released their poll, "For the first time, there is clarity on her likely November opponent. It is Republican Patrick Little, who today polls at 18% overall, but whose rural," there's that word again, wait a minute, "economic anxiety." But whose rural coalition is strong enough that he ties Feinstein in California's Central Valley. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. And then there's that the outfit that created the ad and ran it, allegedly without Patrick Little's knowledge. By the way, in that clip there, the muddied up little bit of audio at the end, those are little girls yelling, "Goodbye, Jews!" A clip from Schindler's List. Now, robocalls aren't cheap. And this is a this constitutes an in-your-face abuse of freedom of speech in the United States. But the Road to Power that paid for the robocall and said and describes itself as white nationalist, anti-Jew, they're kind of under the radar. Nobody knows much about them. But they don't hide who they are. Here's one of their posts touting their filthy little podcast. If a store suggested that maybe you had taken something, and can they look in your bag, what would you do? Let them, right? Well, you're white. A beep, you know, that word, refuses and escalates the situation till the cops have to be called to do it, and then accuse police of abuse. Negroids are not Americans. Negroids are not humans. All must be deported. Yeah, being good Nazis, they hate everybody. You know, they've got that thing they do at Walmart. And just as my own little... And I'm cloaked in white privilege, so I can get away with it. They've got somebody standing there who wants to check off your receipt against your stuff in your bag. And I just decided a while back that I'm not participating anymore. So the last time somebody asked me, I looked at him, I said, well, you know, I'm in kind of a hurry and I didn't steal anything from you, so I don't think I'm going to be stopping. And just kept going. Because it's annoying as hell. You go in there, you spend your money, you deal with them, well, you deal with them honestly from your end to theirs. And then they want to act like you're a thief on the way out the door. No, I don't let them look in my bag. But again, I can get away with it. Patrick Little, meanwhile, when he found out about the robocall, said, "Whew, laddies! I got an email for a news station asking for a comment. Didn't even know this was being done." My sides split every time I hear that robocall. Goyim, the robocall was great work. Whoever did that. More. That's the top polling Republican for the United States Senate in the 2018 election cycle. Keith says, what the... Bob, did I tune into the wrong program, or am I in an alternate universe? This shit is just oozing from everywhere, and more places to ooze from keep showing up. Well, don't worry, Keith. They're just suffering from economic anxiety. And I'm sure if we just talk very nicely to them and promise them free college tuition and free health care, that they'll come away around to our way of seeing things. James says, subject line, California election law. According to California law, the top two candidates on the ballot may both be Democrats in November. Yeah, they can be. But if it's Feinstein versus Little, it's going to be Feinstein versus Nazi. But the thing is, the weird is all over creation right now. For instance, let me find this cat. Oh, there it is. They're having their primary in Idaho today. And much like the Young Turks had Paula Jean Swearingen on their program pushing her primary candidacy against Joe Manchin, Alex Jones is touting the candidacy of Michael Snyder. Let's have a listen.
Americans are totally clueless, and you know, it's like when they go to DC, it's like they have their signs surgically removed. They're constantly compromising on anything. They've been compromising for so long, they don't believe in anything anymore. That's why we need to send people to Washington that aren't just right on the issues, but that are willing to fight. And if I go to Congress, I mean, we very well understand I'm going to be the most hated member of Congress in all of Washington, D.C.
Oh, it'd be beautiful if you were there, because Ted's just educating folks in Idaho by running, and you are in a close second place in a seven-way race. But if you get there, imagine you up there on C-SPAN, on national TV, everywhere, going through the New World Order, going through the TPP, going through the Department of Education. It would really be a good thing.
Oh, and I'll go right to the floor of the House of Representatives, and I'll start ranting like Alex Jones. You guys know me right from the floor of the House of Representatives. So if you want to see that, we have this opportunity to defeat the globalists one seat at a time.
Oh, and I'm saying, don't be like the Democrats. And if your mom, your dad, your cousin, your brother, whatever died the last few years on the voter roll, do not go in and vote in their name. And I'm not being tongue-in-cheek. We really shouldn't become the enemy. But go catch illegals or, you know, folks vote in the name of dead people. Just make sure you get out and you vote. And because you know they're going to pull some hanky-panky.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But the beautiful thing is, the primaries, we can have so much more of an impact than the general election. Because in our primaries...
But that is an issue. The Democrats are giving driver's licenses all over the country to illegals to vote. They're doing all this. And then we as libertarians or Christians, we don't cheat. Okay, I don't cheat. But we need to start prosecuting these people that are caught cheating.
Yeah, we need to restore the rule of law in this country. That's why I'm the only one.
I'll be honest, though. I've really thought about, because if conservatives started cheating, we'd be much better than Democrats at it. And I mean, at
rejection.
A certain level, man, I think about cheating because they're cheating. And I'm not going to cheat. I'm being honest here, but I think about it.
Yeah, okay. Now, Michael Snyder is from the religion industry White Wing in Idaho. And so when I saw this clip, I went and checked out the what is ballot wiki or whatever it's called. Yeah, he was trailing the top two or three candidates. He was like in seventh place or something. But there's Alex Jones claiming that he's in second place going into today's Idaho primary, which is kind of similar to something that happened here in West Virginia last week when the challenger for Joe Manchin in the primary, who was primarily sponsored by the Young Turks. I mean, this isn't me gooning on the Young Turks. They just were. I mean, that Justice Democrats pack was formed by one of Cenk's buddies. And Cenk was part of Justice Democrats until the information came out about him writing sleazy, derogatory posts about women, and then they booted him off. But there they were coming up on Election Day. Oh, Paula Jean surging in the polls. Get your donations in now. When she lost by 71% to 29%, so. But you know, this guy says if I can just get there, I'm and see if you win the Republican primary in Idaho, you win the general election. It's a one-party state. I mean, there are a few Democrats there, maybe in the state house and whatnot, but. You know, not particularly competitive. But he's gonna turn the House of Representatives into the Alex Jones show. Wonder what he talks about when you get him good and liquored up and ask him about the Jews or the Negroids. Yeah. It is, after all, Titanic Tuesday, remember. And we have massive amounts of manifestations of Titanic right-wing intellect all on offer for you and me and us to enjoy in stunned, slack-jawed, horrified amazement. Mm-hmm. And we have we've reached about 15 minutes past 7 p.m. And we'll take we'll probably take our break now. And if you want to call in and engage in some conversation, you're more than welcome so to do. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178. Or toll-free, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And from, you know, anywhere on planet Earth that you can get past the firewall, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. But for just right now, we'll take our break, and of course, it being a Tuesday, that means that the Green News Report is coming up. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with their always engaging twice-weekly broadcast. Let's see, a couple of other... notes. Silent R. Lamar says, good point on the bag checkers at Walmart. Those checkers are standing at the exit door in front of checkout registers. Are they hiring blind bag checkers? Well, no blind jokes, please. But, yeah, I get the point. Scott and Punky say that Patrick Little will have not much of a chance against Dianne Feinstein. But sooner... After 2016, I take nothing for granted. James points out of Illinois, cheating? Funny, every time somebody's caught, it's a Republican. Yeah. Marty says, send me to Patagonia and I'll go, happily. I know. Marty says, and how does that top polling Republican stand against Feinstein and the next highest Democrat? Remember, we have the primary system where the top two vote-getters, regardless of party, go on to the general election. I predict Patrick Little will draw nicely from Orange County, though. Maybe the state of Jefferson areas. Ask Sparky about that one. And then the Central Valley, as noted in the article. He was, in that poll, which is just one poll, mind you, Dianne Feinstein had 39%. The next person was Patrick Little at 18%. There was no second Democrat. The next Democrat was below Patrick Little. Okay? Just to be clear on that issue. So, let's take a break, shall we? And, see where the conversation in the remainder of the program takes us. And, you know, there's only one line. And we are at 20 minutes past, we're an hour and 20 minutes into the program. And, well, we're still at zero. We had $325 to raise this evening. And, we're still at $325 to go. Can we eliminate some of that so that we don't have just a horrifying number to deal with going into the into midweek, or heck, could we knock down all of that? 32 people. Hey, 32 new subscribers at $10 a piece. That'd be cool. Thank you very kindly to Ron and Raleigh for a highly appropriate mid-program bumper. Oh, by the way, I mentioned Cyrus the Great earlier. It might be a good time to reiterate that an outfit is has minted a commemorative coin. It's not an actual spending coin in Israel, featuring the faces of Donald Trump and Cyrus the Great of Persia. Yeah. Because they've got so much in common, those two. I know, I know. But it just points to the appropriateness of the bumper that Ron and Raleigh has suggested. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. Yeah, I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, May 15, 2018.
We're very grateful for Scott Pruitt's leadership, and I would just tell you that
EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt still has a job amid revelations EPA blocked reports showing widespread water contamination. New studies confirm global warming is rapidly intensifying hurricanes and their rainfall. Plus, California adopts landmark new solar building codes.
All of that tyranny and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Today is the 50th birthday of EPA chief and endangered animal fracker Scott Pruitt. Personally, I'll be honoring Scotty by roasting polar bear kebabs over a plastic bottle bonfire.
Happy birthday, Scott Pruitt. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we go away for a week, which is like 3 years in Donald Trump time, and Scott Pruitt still has a job at the EPA?
Yes, yes, he does.
The most corrupt EPA administrator of all time?
Yep. But we'll get to that in a moment. First, Trump administration aides blocked the publication of a major federal health study showing a widespread nationwide water contamination crisis. That's just one of the revelations in a trove of internal Environmental Protection Agency emails obtained via public information requests by the Union of Concerned Scientists. The emails show that federal scientists with the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry had determined that toxic chemicals known as PFOA and PFOS, used in Teflon and other products, have contaminated water supplies across the country and pose a much greater danger to human health at far lower contamination levels than the EPA had previously said was safe.
So we know what's in this report. It looks bad for a whole bunch of companies, and yet the administration is simply refusing to release it?
That's right. The study was blocked after EPA political appointees and White House appointees called the revelations, quote, a potential public relations nightmare, saying that publication would increase the cost of cleanups of contamination at military sites and chemical manufacturing plants.
We know Scott Pruitt and Donald Trump are climate change deniers, but they have pretended the one thing they do care about is clean air and clean water, and here we see they don't actually care about clean water at all.
No, they apparently do not. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt still has his job and is still deregulating those industries that pollute Americans' air and water. In an interview with NBC, Vice President Mike Pence ignored questions about Pruitt's spending and his corruption scandals and instead praised Pruitt for foisting the burden of pollution onto the public.
Scott Pruitt has done an outstanding job lifting the burden of regulations that were stifling American businesses across this country.
Never mind the people who live at those contaminated sites who don't even know that they're drinking contaminated water. Meanwhile, forecasters now say the U.S. should brace for another active Atlantic hurricane season this year, which officially begins on June 1st, even as hard-hit communities like Puerto Rico are still struggling from last year's hurricanes. Now, a new study from the U.S. Pacific Northwest National Laboratory confirms that powerful Atlantic hurricane storms fueled by warming ocean temperatures are intensifying much more rapidly than they did just 30 years ago, spinning up from zero to extremely dangerous in just hours and giving communities little time to prepare. A separate study also concludes that warmer oceans are turbocharging storms' rainfall capacity, turning them into even greater rain producers. And just a reminder, hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria last year each landed among the top five costliest hurricanes in U.S. history. In Louisiana, electric utility giant Entergy has confirmed that its PR company paid actors as much as $200 a day to pose as grassroots supporters, testifying in support of their controversial proposed natural gas power plant in front of the New Orleans City Council. Entergy claims it did not know about the use of paid actors in advance, but has announced it will not charge customers for that cost.
Wow. So they were paying actual crisis actors to show up and do this.
Yes, they were.
No wonder Republicans think the Democrats are being paid to protest by George Soros, because that's what they're doing all the time, actually paying people to protest.
Finally, some good news. In a landmark revision of statewide building codes, the California Energy Commission voted unanimously to require rooftop solar panels to be installed on all new single-family homes and multifamily buildings in the state beginning in 2020. The updated building codes also add incentives for advanced energy efficiency and were supported by the home building industry. A state study found that the higher upfront cost of energy-efficient homes with rooftop solar would be more than offset by cheaper utility bills.
Well, there's some good news. Thank you, Des. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right.
I just can't help but make you feel good. Here comes the sun. 7:31 here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Conversation going on in the chat room after playing Crazy Train. I said, you know, damn, but Randy Rhodes was a genius. And Anatole says, I always prefer Nicole over Randy. And I said, no, 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 the guitar player, not the talker. Yeah, I know, I know. Foam Cup says, listen, the three best bands ever to live are CSNY, Nine Inch Nails, and Sir Mix-a-Lot. That is an eclectic mix, Foam Cups, and I will give you props for your broad taste in music. So we are halfway through the program. You know, it got up to like 89 degrees here today. And, you know, we've still got a goose egg on the board as far as fundraising is concerned. So I hate to resort to threats. But, look, don't make me turn the video on when I'm doing naked radio, okay? It's one thing, you know, there's no value. There's no inherent horror in me threatening to do that in the dead of winter when it's 42 degrees in here and I'm wearing 19 layers of clothing. But I'm glowing in the dark here because it's naked radio. Do not make me turn the video on, okay? Let's knock down a little of this fundraising. In point of fact, Steve in New York put a $10 challenge on the table, hoping that someone will match it. And he said, $10 challenge. Okay, people, get off your ass. Sorry to be blunt, but, well, suck it up. And so there's $10 waiting for somebody to kick in $10 to go with it. And even as I was speaking, Foam Cups jumped in with an Andy Jackson, or perhaps someday a Tubman, although I don't see the Mint doing that during the reign of Meta Mussolini. But thank you very kindly, Foam Cups. And so the $10 challenge is still on the table, because that actually landed before I announced it, and that would take us. So now we're down to 305, and that would take us down to 285, and that would be extremely helpful. And I don't believe me. You, not only do I not want to look. It's one thing to do naked radio. It's another thing to do naked television. Trust me, you don't want to see this. The horror. The horror. Okay? Let's run to the phones. We haven't heard from Kevin in Colorado Springs in a while. Hey, Kevin.
No, you haven't heard from me in a while. That's because I was otherwise occupied for a while.
You were like busy being sicker than hell, weren't you?
Yeah, nearly died.
Damn.
I'm amazed that I'm this well this soon. Been home from the hospital 2 weeks ago now and made a lot of progress. So, well on my way to recovery.
Good.
You don't want it. I had acute pancreatitis, and it
I've been there.
Killed me.
I've been there. Yep. It's awful.
Yes, it is. And so I'm back, and you know.
Well, I mean, what did they do to make you all better?
I'm just curious
because I have no health care, so I've just kind of got to figure it out as I go. What do they recommend out there?
Well, what I had was very sudden. I got sick with what I thought was food poisoning, and the last thing I remember is standing at my cat's food bowl, giving her extra food and water because I knew I was sick, and I stood up and I said, baby, your daddy's awfully sick. That's the last thing I remember for the next 3 days. I don't know how I got to the hospital. I must have pressed my lifeline button. I have no idea. I woke up in the hospital.
That's terrifying, Kevin.
Yeah. But I wasn't terrified.
Yeah, says the guy who didn't go through it. I mean, Jesus.
Well, when I woke up in the hospital, I was out of it, but I was at least conscious enough to be aware of my mother there with me. And since my mother normally lives 2,000 miles away, I knew it wasn't good if my mother had come all the way out to Colorado Springs.
God, who knew to contact her? I mean, was that the people at the hospital or what?
I think the Lifeline people did, because my balance is always sucks. I have one of those Lifeline things, and I think that's what happened. I pressed it, and they called her and called the ambulance at the same time. I don't know for sure, though, Bob. I thought about checking into what happened when, but I don't know if I really want to.
I can't blame you for being that way. But all you can know is that somehow or another the system worked. But I hate it that you went through that. I mean, were there dietary changes? Did they fix it with medicine? What did they do, man?
Because the pancreas controls so many things besides the blood sugar in your body.
Yes, it does.
My whole system was whacked. They gave me all sorts of hormones, among other things, just trying to get my kidneys and liver and everything else working again. And it gradually, for about a week, my blood sugar would do these wild swings, 400 one minute. You take it an hour later, and it's 100. You know, I mean, it was...
Are you diabetic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Insulin-dependent?
So, no.
Ooh.
Even after I got out of the hospital, I'm still... It's gone back to where it was before I got sick. As long as I take my diabetes medicine every day, I'm fine. Blood sugar might be a little bit high, 169 or something, but it's not grossly high or grossly low, you know. And so I'm back taking one pill a day.
Well, I've noticed that when mine decides to go south, it often is presaged by consistently, no matter what I'm eating, higher than normal blood sugar numbers. That's why I take it every morning.
Yep.
And as long as I'm, you know, as long as I take it in the morning and I'm riding around about 100, 110, you know, I'm good.
Yep.
But it's terrifying, and I'm sorry you went through it, Kevin. I mean, you've been a friend of this program for a very, very long time, and that's worrisome. And did they tell you they had it licked?
What the doctor told me is they don't know what causes a sudden onset of acute pancreatitis, and they can't guarantee that won't happen again.
Weren't drinking cheap tequila through a straw or a swirly straw or anything, were you?
No, I haven't taken a drink in 20 years, Bob, and that's the first thing they asked me when I got conscious, had you been drinking? No. I guess people who drink having diabetes do tend to get it more. But I haven't taken a drink in 20 years.
Oh, I remember. I remember the first time I went to the hospital with it. The doctor looks at me and says, "You no drink."
Yep.
I said, "Nothing? No water? No cranberry juice? Nothing? I'm parched here." He goes, "No, you no drink alcohol." I said, "No, I no drink alcohol."
Yep. I don't know. To me, that question, it wasn't insulting, but in a way it is.
It is.
They assume, yeah, They assume that's why you got it is because you were drinking.
Well, I remember when John Ashcroft, you know, who is more sanctimonious than Almighty God. Remember when he was Attorney General?
I try to forget.
Back during the Reign of Error. You know, you wonder, when he went in with pancreatitis, did they say, well, Brother John, have you been hitting the sauce, buddy? No.
Yep. No, of course not.
But the first time I went in with it, I had a beard, you know, a beard down to my clavicle and my Viking gone to seed hair. And they just automatically assumed that I was one of the hillbillies from under the bridge where you spend your days drinking screw top wine.
Yep. And it's very scary to think. Unfortunately, my doctors didn't think this way when I got to the hospital because I was in no position to tell them any different. They had assumed that I was one of those, quote unquote, those people, would I be alive today? And it's unfortunate that we have to think about that.
Well, and it's a very real concern because I guess it was within the last 2 weeks there was an op-ed piece in the New York Times of all places where some doctor was opining that he was sick and tired of resuscitating or doing surgeries for heart problems on addicts, and that once maybe twice, nah, let them die. I mean, and no, really, that was in the New York Times, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, I know. You hear people say it. At least here in Colorado Springs, I do. I hear people say stuff like that all the time.
Well, of course, you're in Colorado Springs. I mean, Jesus lives in the burbs there, right?
Right up on top of a little hill here in Colorado Springs is Jim Dodson. Pope of the Protestant Church. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the guy who said that you can keep little boys from catching the gay by having their daddies stand in the shower and wag their penises in their face.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the beat children till they cry real tears guy. So I'm sure there's a lot of Christian compassion out there in Colorado Springs, without a doubt. By the way, our buddy Jim says, Lord, all my best to Kevin and abject sympathy for his past infirmity and hopes that it doesn't return. So, and anybody who's ever dealt with pancreatitis is out there among the Horn Family Community Congregation is out there cringing right now.
Yeah, it is an insidious disease because I know of people. It took them months to get over it. I mean, it.
Yeah.
You wonder if it really ever leaves you because I still have pain in my stomach on almost a daily basis. And I'm really.
Still got your, just out of curiosity, you still got your gallbladder?
Nope. No gallbladder, no appendix.
Because what they explained to me was like that sludge would back up out of my gallbladder and block the pancreatic duct, and that caused the amylase and the lipase and the flageolase and the Knutin valve to shut down, and that caused all my. But who knows? But yeah, it does take months. I mean, all those months that I was sitting there joking about, well, today I had parsnip yogurt that was all from that.
Yeah.
And I think I lost, you know, like 50 or 60 pounds in about 2.5 months.
Yep. Yeah, my appetite's not what it was even before I went in the hospital because a matter of not wanting to eat, I just don't have the appetite. And I'm obviously, like you, staying away from anything spicy or, you know, that I think might upset my stomach. Which is a boring way to live, but, you know, it's better than being in pain, so...
Yeah, you know, the hot and fiery doesn't bug me so much. It seems like vile and greasy is where the trouble starts.
Yep. And it makes you wonder, because 4 or 5 months ago, I had my helper person that comes in fix me some corned beef hash and fried eggs. And I got really sick off that. And it makes you wonder if that wasn't a harbinger of things to come, so to speak.
Well, it could well have been. With you with no gallbladder, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been without a gallbladder for 10 years now, just about, Bob. And I very rarely have trouble like that, though. I still can tolerate, at least I could before this.
Well, and that canned corned beef hash can bust your ass. But, you know, you mentioned eggs. You know, apparently the salmonella outbreak is still going on in this country because we can't seem to produce eggs that aren't toxic because of how we raise the damn chickens. You never see news of salmonella outbreaks coming from eggs in Europe.
No. I think, too, part of that is people have to be aware of how they're cooking things, too. Make sure you're cooking things at the right temperature. Because even though the eggs contain salmonella, just make sure you're cooking them, you know, not burning them, but cooking them properly.
Right, but the thing is, they don't have to. That's the difference between Europe and the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, eggs are kept at room temperature in Europe because the way they raise the chickens, they basically don't feed chicken shit to chickens.
Right.
They don't feed chicken bone meal to chickens.
Yep.
And we, on the other hand, will feed just about anything to chickens. And then we say, well, you know, you got to make sure you keep your eggs refrigerated below 40 degrees.
Yep.
Well, I ain't eating no 40-degree egg.
Yep.
You know, you're gonna wind up cooking them somehow or another.
Yep. And when I was young, childhood up in my teenage years, I lived on kind of a miniature farm. We had chickens, goats, cows, that kind of thing. And, you know, we'd go out and get our own eggs, and they'd be out. They'd have laid the eggs a day or two earlier. We never got sick off those eggs. You know, we brought them in, refrigerated them. And
well, you weren't feeding chicken bone meal to your chickens either. They were eating what chickens eat, you know, grubworms and earthworms and pecking around at corn and stuff like that. But
that was natural, no chemicals, no growth hormones, no, you know.
Yeah.
So, different time now, though. And
well, just, you know, be careful going forward. And.
Well, you know, what was really scary to me once I got to a level of consciousness where I understood what happened, because it came on so suddenly, I had no time to tell anybody. I mean, a lot of my friends on Twitter mostly, because I don't do Facebook, but people were wondering where I was at. And even friends I talked to just about every day, I suddenly disappeared, and they had no idea because I never had time to tell them, you know. And my mother, of course, coming out here, she had no idea who my friends were, and, you know what I'm saying? She's 80 years old, so she had no way of wondering who to call or anything like that. And it's just scary to think. It made me really realize how suddenly things can change, because you could be in a car accident, same thing, you know what I'm saying? You don't know. And it's, I guess in a sense, made me appreciate life, but made me appreciate my routine in life, being able to get back to my routine in my house and, you know, doing those simple little things every day that I do. That's what I really have appreciated since this happened. Because
suddenly the mundane isn't so damn mundane anymore.
That's right. And, yeah, so I wanted to touch base with y'all and let you know where I was, because I didn't just suddenly drop out again. I guess I did, but not like I wanted to.
Not by choice.
Right.
You didn't.
Exactly.
Unlike Nikki Haley, you didn't go off in a huff, or a huff and a half.
But that was the only good part of it. I didn't hear any politics for a month, Bob. So that was nice. So
that may have been the pancreatic cleanse that you needed, Kevin.
That's right. I came back with a whole new attitude until I turned on the TV and saw that Donald Trump was still president. So, you know.
And now I've screwed everything up.
Oh, no, we'll get through it, we hope. You said it was 89 out there in West Virginia the other day. It was 87 here last week.
Yeah, and then I saw photos of, like, some massive-ass hailstorm.
Yeah, we had one just now, about an hour before I called. It's the worst hailstorm I've seen here where I'm at now in probably 10 years. It just kept hailing. It wasn't damaging hail, at least not to any windows or anything around here, but it just kept hailing. I'm blind, so I have no idea how many inches were on the ground.
Let me help. I saw photographs of people shoveling their driveway like it was a foot deep snow.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
I'd never seen the like.
Oh, it happens with some frequency here in the mountains, but a storm like this is rare. I thought I was back home as a child living in a trailer with a bad rainstorm. It sounded that way, and I'm on the second floor of a three-story apartment, and it still sounded like it was a tin roof the hail was falling on. That's how loud it was.
Yeah, no climate change or anything, though, so take comfort in that.
Someone on Twitter reminded, what are you talking about? There's no climate change. I didn't even bother to reply to the idiot. But, you know, they just want to bury their heads in the sand with this. And it's right there in front of their eyes. You just have to look at the weather and what it's doing.
And as Brad and Desi pointed out in the Green News report a few minutes ago, of course, hurricane season begins on June 1.
Yep.
And if we should happen to have another booger, a booger of a season with one on top of the other, like what happened last year, hell, Puerto Rico may just disappear.
Yep. And because if it's Puerto Rico, they ain't getting help from Donald Trump.
No.
And that's just got to be scary to those people because, they're still recovering from last year. And even the people in Florida are still recovering from last year. And on the other flip side of that, May so far for tornadoes has been exceptionally quiet until today. I don't know if you heard about the tornadoes up in Connecticut and Massachusetts today.
No.
But there were tornadoes in Connecticut and Massachusetts.
Because that happens all the time.
Right. But according to these right-wing people, it's just the weather being the weather. And,
What's it going to take? Sandstorms in Calgary? I mean... I know they got the Chinook winds and stuff up there, but I mean, that's one of the problems, Kevin, is that this is one of those situations where people can go, well, you know, I mean, but yeah, I just choose to ignore it. I don't know.
It's kind of like pancreatitis, Bob. If you haven't had it, it's no big deal. But once you've had it, you believe that it exists. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I imagine that's the way that Melanoma Trump feels about nephrotic Bela Lugosiosis.
Well, that might be why she's in the hospital.
That's the disease I invented for her.
Yep.
It's a disease that strikes the undead when the clotting factor of their victims begins to pile up inside their kidneys. Hence, nephrotic Bela Lugosiosis. I'm sorry, I'm still proud of that. I thought that was cute.
I liked it.
No, I know, but I know what I think. And yeah, look, they get to speculate, we get to speculate. It's all fun. I think she tried to bump herself off.
It was curious to me that yesterday the president, so-called president, said she would be out of the hospital in another 2 or 3 days, And if you're listening to what they've been saying about whatever it is she has, you didn't get the impression she was going to be out of the hospital anytime soon. And yet, he's trying to get her out of the hospital because he doesn't like the publicity. And you definitely can tell she definitely is suffering.
And the question I'm asking, and you know, apart from speculation and goofy disease names and things like that, who's looking after Barron? School's not out. They didn't ship him up to New York for Donald Jr.'s ex-wife to look after him.
Yep.
With his little cousins.
Maybe Sarah Sanders.
And that's why she was out. That's why she was laying out of work playing hooky today.
Maybe. Who knows? You know. Of course, it was nice to have her not at work today, but we won't go into that. So.
Well, every day without Sarah Hasselbalch Sandbags is a day with more sunshine.
You know, listening to you talk before the break, I just got the image of this is so much like, I hate to make the comparison, that word Germany in 1930-something, because, you know, these people, it's the same mindset, the same mentality, and the same denial of everything. And just like that idiot that, Alex Jones was interviewing. God, it's scary, Bob. And granted, Alex Jones was saying the guy was in second place when he's really in 30th place, but they keep pushing this crap on people. And the propaganda is what scares me, because people are believing it. And people can't differentiate. I know there's propaganda on the left, like you were talking about with the Young Turks and that, trying to promote that second-string candidate to Manchin and stuff. But, man, I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for here? Discerning?
Oh, that's a good one.
Discernment. Yeah. Because I know when I'm getting scammed, even by people on the left trying to tell me a candidate can win, when I know the candidate has no real shot.
Jill can win. Jill can win.
Yep. And it'll be almost guaranteed in 2020 something like that's going to come up again too, Bob. You could almost go to Las Vegas and put money down and get rich off of it. There's going to be a third.
Let's talk about that for a minute, Kevin. You're absolutely correct. But the question is, why? And I have the answer. Third-party candidacies and lost cause candidacies are a great racket.
Yep.
Because it's a license to print money. And in particular, with the Greens and the Jill Steins and the Mountain Parties and whatnot, all you have to do is show up and run, and you never have to get anything right. You never have to be validated by the voters. You never have to win. You just have to talk about the on our side, goddamn establishment shills.
Yep.
Goddamn DNC, Libby Wasserman Schultz. And the money comes in.
Yep.
And, good work if you can get it, I guess. But it's not limited to the Democratic side. Look at the Libertarians.
Yep.
Look at the Constitution Party. You know, maybe it's not a great living, but it's a good living. I don't know, you know, what Jill Stein's status is, but she's not running a little family practice, you know, keeping the lights on that way, to the best of my knowledge. She's they are left or right. They are politically the equivalent of the Washington Generals. They get paid to get beat.
Yep.
And
it's the same thing I was saying, discerning, because when will people realize this? You know, I'm all for a third party candidate as long as I know that I'm still going to vote for the most winnable candidate. I don't want that third party candidate to run if he's going to take away votes from the candidate that won the primary, you know. But I'm good with hearing the message a third party candidate might put out or a lost cause candidate might say, but I damn sure ain't going to vote for him if they ain't got no chance to win. And I haven't, even in local elections, Bob, I haven't seen a third-party candidate, so-called, win an election just by what they're saying. Because they don't have, most of them do not have the record behind them that you can look at and say, yes, this would be a good candidate to take this seat, whatever the office is. And how many times have we in this country heard a candidate speak really well and turn out to be the worst possible person you could elect for the job?
Well, look, without going into the particulars, we're just talking about laws of political gravity, if you will.
Yep.
If somebody runs as a Green candidate, well, who are the Greens closer to ideologically? The Democrats or the Republicans? Well, the Democrats.
Yep.
And that law of political gravity says that third-party candidates hurt the party to which they are nearest, from an ideological standpoint. So, in a situation where you've got a Republican, a Libertarian, and a Democrat running, the Libertarian will hurt the Republican. In a race where a tight race where there's a Republican, a Democrat, and a Greenie running, the Greenie will hurt the Democrat.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened in 2016.
Yep. And then, of course, you have those, I'm not going to vote because my candidate's not on the ballot.
The lesser of two evils is still evil, dude.
Yep. Congratulations, you got really evil now. You know, so.
And it's not going to change unless there are deep structural changes to the Constitution of the United States, to the point that what we have as a governmental structure now is fundamentally torn down and rebuilt with a parliamentary system.
Yep.
I mean, the jungle primary in places that, you know. California has them. I think there's some in the deep south in places, you know, where you can wind up with two people from the same party running against each other in the general. That's one way of trying to deal with it. But another way to try to deal with it is what they call instant runoff voting. And given the monkeying that's been done with our electoral system, what a nightmare that would be. As much as I like it conceptually, what a nightmare that would be for, say, you know, little Russian bot troll farms to come in and play with.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. I see no problem with paper ballots, counting them hand by hand until we fix the problem. But the Americans' lust for instant gratification ensures that we're going to have these electronic machines that can be hacked. And as long as a machine can be hacked, I don't trust the vote and never will completely. It's just been proven.
Well, like I said last week, I don't know if I voted or not.
Yeah, exactly. And there are machines that don't even give you the confirmation that you voted. You just punch the machine, and like I said, you don't know whether you voted or not. It said you did, but you have no idea. And why not? If we're going to have these machines, why can't it print out a ballot that you can take home to prove how you voted in case there is a problem? You know?
Right.
So, in theory at least, our elections could be controlled anytime anybody who has the money and wherewithal to control them can do it. And that can be a Russian, or that can be some guy in his basement trying to hack the voting machines. You know? And I'd like to be more cheery about the faith I have in our system, but my faith in the system is just, it's at an all-time low. I won't say it's completely gone, but it's at an all-time low, because I'm scared to death in 2020 this president we've got is going to get reelected one way or the other. And we haven't done one step toward, one real step, I'd say, as a country, to ensure that the same thing that happened in the 2016 election won't happen in 2020.
Well, I just got a note from Randy in PA who says, in 2016, the Libertarian Party took far more votes away from Trump than the Green Party took away from Mrs. Clinton. But you won't tell your audience that. Well, I just did, Randy, at your urging. But the raw numbers are not what matters. It's the where that matters. And that's where the targeted nature of the support comes from. Was there a bunch of Democratic money flowing into Libertarian campaigns? No. But time after time after time, we've seen Republican money go into Green or independent Democrat, you know, progressive third party campaigns. I think back to, you know, 2000 when Ralph Nader was running around saying there was not a dime's bit of difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush. Man, how wrong he was. Yep. But at the same time, there were Republican dollars pouring in to the Ralph Nader for President hopeless campaign to do exactly what it was, what the Republicans intended it to do. Now, have the Democrats done some of that too? Absolutely. And you know, and then there's some real dirty business going on up in what I think Montana, where there's a hardcore fetus fetish, the upstanding Bible believing Christ-centered evangelical fundamentalist homosexual right-wing white-wing Christian economic anxiety candidate running as a Green.
Yep.
And the Green Party of, I think it's Montana, says, well, you know, I guess he's got a right to. But it's a great racket. It just like PACs. PACs are a mech.
Yep.
And both sides are figuring it out, and we've seen it in action.
Yep.
I can, as I've said before, I could start, if I had just if I had a larcenous, you know, heart, I could start up a PAC and call it, Save the Mountains Pack.
Yep.
And I could fundraise and send out targeted Facebook ads and bring in just gobs of money. And, you know, maybe I'll give $1,000 to this candidate or that candidate. But I really don't have to, because I can take, yep, the vast majority of it and expense it out and put it into per diems, and pay the bulk of it in a salary to the administrative director of the PAC, who, of course, will be, you know, me.
Yep.
And that's been done. It's happened.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can pay a candidate for the equivalent of $40,000 a year to run a hopeless campaign, and pay travel and pay for per diems and pay reimbursements. It's a beautiful, you know, if you run in those kinds of circles, Kevin, it's like being licensed to print money. And because of the way our campaign finance laws are structured, there is something approaching zero accountability for any of it.
Yep.
For instance, the Nazis who paid for that robocall out in California. Mm. We're never going to find out where the money came from to run those ads.
Yep.
Because they have not only a right to political speech, free speech, but to secret free speech.
Yep.
And the system is what the system is. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, when did U.S. media obsessively demand that Republicans should respect and understand Democratic voters? When? Because I missed it. Well, it's not a compelling story. This idea that Democrats and oppressed minorities need to go out and hold the hands and pat the soft little heads of the economically anxious, white, racist, xenophobic, bigot, Klan-supporting, neo-Nazi, skinhead assholes is entirely an invention of the white wing. Because they don't want to own who they are. They want to provide excuses for their bigotry. And by God, they have done a fantastic job of it. So, you know, welcome back to the wonderful world of politics. Hopefully, hopefully our conversation hasn't made your liver quiver or your pancreas palpitate. And I don't say that jokingly. I mean that very seriously.
No.
I'm glad to know you're back up to speed, and I want you to keep, I hope we all of us do here at the Horn Family Community Congregation, Kevin, want you to keep getting better and, you know, kind of like stay in touch.
Oh, well, I'll be around. I've been around, and just not for the past month, give or take a couple weeks, but it's good to be back in the real world again. And I'll leave you with this, though, Bob. How do we change the narrative? How is there any better way we can get our message out? And I don't mean to people that are listening to us now, but to people who aren't as bigoted as this guy in Montana or California, but that are kind of, if there is a difference, but you know what I'm saying. How do I convince those people who aren't as hateful as the guy in California?
Well, you're asking the million-dollar question. And my suspicion, Kevin, is that it changes from area to area. The conversation that I have with somebody here in West Virginia about the need for people to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick is not going to be materially different, but it's going to be esoterically different. It's going to have a different flavor. It's going to have a different sound. It's going to have a different tone than a conversation, say with somebody in Massachusetts who already has Romney Care up there and knows how beneficial that is. And I'm going to keep calling it Romney Care because that sucker didn't want to own it in 2012, but it's his and it's not perfect, but it's something. It's kind of like the Affordable Care Act that way. Yep. Would I like to see universal access to health care? Hell yes. I mean, to be somewhat dickish, if Israel can have it, why can't we?
Yeah, we like Israel so much. Why
being,
not?
Being how we subsidize theirs, why can't we?
Yep. Yep, exactly. But it's a question for me that encompasses not just that, but everything. And I
oh no, it's big world philosophical. And if you've got an answer, I want to hear it.
And I don't. I will tell you that when my mother was out here, our teachers went on strike. And my mother, despite listening to Fox News almost every night when she's home in Florida, was on the side of the teachers.
Well, good for Mom.
Because she was raised in a time and a generation when education meant something. And she realizes our teachers are underpaid. So, you know, that was something I saw, and I didn't have to say a darn thing. I just let her talk about it. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it made me happy that maybe she's seeing what I've been seeing in a different light. I don't know. Maybe it was because her son's sick lying in the hospital with. I don't know the answer to that. But that was one of the questions I thought of, because for these people that aren't as hateful, but they do have prejudice and they do have, they're right-wing-ish, there's got to be some way. And I don't know the answer, you don't know the answer, but it's something I ponder.
Well, I mean, look, and maybe the teacher, pay issue is the bellwether and the model for all of this, because I guarantee you that a whole bunch of the teachers who were standing on picket lines in West Virginia and Colorado and Oklahoma and Arizona, I guarantee you they were not, as much as I wish they were, all Democrats. And while you were out for a little bit, I ran a clip of an Oklahoma teacher who said, "No, I'm still going to vote for a Republican, but if these Republicans don't get it done, I'll find me a different Republican." And of course, my immediate response to that was to say, "Well, you know, you're making progress, but you haven't gotten there yet, because ain't no Republican going to do what you need doing."
No. So, I'll leave you with that, Bob. That's one of those philosophical questions that I want to throw out there, and if anybody has an answer, I'm more than willing to listen. So.
All right. Well, thanks, Kevin, and I'm so glad you called, and I'm so glad you're feeling better, and I hope you continue that way.
Thank you, Bob, and we'll talk to you all later.
All right. You take care now. Bye
now. Okay. Bye-bye.
Our buddy Kevin recently recovered from a pretty scary circumstance. Calling from Colorado Springs. I had a note in regard to what I said about melanoma. Brother Deacon Asa said, "You know, you might chalk it up to sycophancy, but I'm entirely convinced that you're right in your speculation about her. She probably did try to bump herself off." Well, think of it. She's not an automaton. Anyone who has ever been philandered on can take a look at that situation and wonder what their response would be. Now, a lot of people, you catch them fooling around in a marriage, a divorce follows shortly thereafter. But she may be trapped. I mean, and I don't necessarily mean with a Michael Cohen patented non-disclosure agreement or anything like that. She may be trapped by the fact that she's the first lady. Now, this is not me getting all weepy about melanoma. She's still a birther who engaged in filthy racist bigotry right alongside her husband. But what she's found out is that it's, you know, and it's not just that she found out he fooled around. She found out that he was fooling around at the same time he was joking about her being fat because she was pregnant. Hint to guys out there. When your wife is pregnant, don't make fat jokes. Wait, let's broaden this. Hey, guys, don't make fat jokes about your wife. Hey, no, let's make it even broader still. Don't make fat jokes. Anybody. Because it's mean and it's hurtful. I mean, you know, Tony Scalia's dead, so we can call him Fat Dead Tony Scalia. But, you know, apart from that, Seriously. So she finds out years and years and years later that at the time she was carrying Baron and giving birth to Baron, and in the immediate aftermath of the birth of Baron, that he's romping with a woman who has sex on video for her job. And the details emerge about him saying, "You were great. You remind me of my daughter Ivanka." Which is like, you know, a second exponential layer of ick. You know, to try to put yourself in her place, how could you even look not only at him, how could you look at Ivanka? Because at this point, it's beginning to resemble a plot line from fucking Chinatown. She's my daughter and my sister. Now, you can't get a divorce. You can't leave. What's your alternative?
Kidney problems.
Yeah, exactly. Brother Deacon Asa says, what you're trying to say is that she might be trapped in the Cohen of silence. See what I did there? I did see what you did there. And you get a cowbell for that. By the way, as we approach the end of the program, thanks go out to Ralphs and to our buddy Keith for responding to Steve in New York's challenge. And this little bit of good news, a note from Charlene. Putting a $20 challenge on the table. If it's met, I'll add another $25. So there's a $20 matching challenge out there. That's all it's going to take is 2 at 10, 4 at 5, you know, 1 at 20. And Charlene will turn it into 40, turn your 20 into 40, and then throw in another 25. And that'll take us down, well, we're that'll take us, my goodness gracious, that'll take us down to very near the $200 mark. And that's humongous. Thank you, Charlene, and thanks to everybody who's kicked in to make things better this evening. We're making progress. So hopefully that will happen in short order. And gosh, if we could take it down under $200, that would be tremendous. Knocking out the whole 325 is almost unimaginable. Note coming in from Terrace. As you've said many times before, non-Nazis also make excuses for American Nazis, claiming they are Americans, too. White nationalists equal Nazis. Trumpansies equal Nazis. Republicans equal Nazis. Ivanka equals Nazi. And Terrace continues and says, I have an African-American friend who makes excuses for lynchers, too. It's a coping mechanism. Hide. Live and let live. Hide inside churches. Damn, Terrace, that's profound. That is profound indeed. Ugh. Sorry, stink bug. Little bastards. They're everywhere. I don't care where you go in West Virginia. You're going to run across one. It's maddening. Okay, hey, Jim, how you doing?
Oh, hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
Oh, I tried to perk along here, and I really enjoy your program tonight. And I really enjoyed your conversation with Kevin. I mean, that poor man has been through the tortures of the damned.
That is a season in hell.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, good Lord. And so, things like that could just hop upon you just all at once. But that being said, all day I have been on Facebook. And I have been combating some of the craziest people you've ever seen in your life that come through the news feed, and it's just incredible. And it's gotten to the point with some of them, and I shouldn't even get into it, but with some of them, I've just had to make some pretty curt replies. And I don't want to waste your time with all that, but there are a lot of nuts out there. And if I could share a couple replies with you, I hope you won't mind.
No, go ahead.
And one was, and I'm quoting here, "These televangelists who bombard the airwaves selling Lord knows what are truly astounding. Every one of these shills would have stored right through the Sermon on the Mount."
Absolute truth.
And another one. "When I hear of megachurches and proponents of the right-wing religion industry with their private jet craft, all tax-free, I am reminded of Christ expelling money changers from the temple, stating they had made up his father's house a den of thieves."
Ye generation of vipers, ye whited sepulchers.
Yes, sir. And it's just amazing how these people get away with this stuff and what they support. And going back to, you know, what Chandler was saying about being fearful about history repeating itself, that ad play out in California is word for word from Joseph Goebbels' 1932 speech before Hitler got placed into the chancellorship. It's verbatim.
Really?
Somebody went into the Goebbels diary and picked that thing right out of there. Because I've got some book with the speech.
Well, when you're talking about American Nazis, they masturbate to that stuff the way that teenage boys with a Playboy centerfold.
They do indeed. And another thing I'd like to share with you is just reflections of the 2016 presidential race. I credit the entire media for Trump as they gave him millions for free publicity. Now they're playing the same game as Citizens United, the Koch brothers, numerous right-wing bloggers, and the NRA. All money is green, or in this case, blood red.
Indeed.
And it's just incredible what is happening, because everybody is so scared. They're totally gobsmacked. And every time when you cut on the TV, you get a bigger dosage of this. And it is truly right what you said last night about 476, that this is the 476 AD of the American Empire.
Well, and what I meant by that, Jim, is that Gibbon, for all of his scholarship, and, you know, we view it through a different lens in the modern era, but he kind of picked that date out arbitrarily. But with the fall of the last emperor in the West, it seemed as good a place as any to say game over. And November 8th, 2016 is beginning to have that same appearance to me.
Well, I agree with you.
Because if you want to get historical about it, you can go back and say that it was the January 20th, 1981 with the ascension of Ronald Reagan. But this is when right-wing Republicanism, November 8th, 2016, is either, depending on how you look at it, right-wing Republicanism reached either its nadir or its zenith.
Well, I think you're right there, too. I couldn't agree with you more. And it's just, so many things that were said on this program in the past couple of days, I just copied it on my Facebook because I really believe what you're saying is true. And I place a great value in the information that comes through here. And I don't think a lot of people on Facebook can put some of the stuff I put on there because I may get a lot of hits. I put one on there this afternoon to quote the Republican removal of social programs in a so-called effort to help people is akin to taking away a life preserver from the shipwreck.
Precisely.
and I won't trouble you with any more of those things. Oh, yeah, I do. I've been given the nickname, the sobriquet, of Demo Fart.
Demo Fart?
Demo Fart. There are two ladies down in South Carolina. I know who they are. And I just replied to them, and I just wrote, I said, having recently discovered the use of the term demo fart, typical, since a term describing said user is a word associated with kittles.
People had best not get into it with you, Jim.
Sir?
You'll give as good as you get. No doubt about it. By the way, you just got a note in from Kevin saying, if I didn't do so earlier in my call, please thank Jim for both his kind words and support. And for that matter, my thanks go out to the whole Horn family as well.
Oh, that man did famously. Listen, on a lighter note, I listened with great enjoyment to Scott talking about Mad Magazine. And it brought back a lot of memories of my own childhood and early adulthood with my association with that magazine. And they had a lot of good stuff in that magazine. They really did. A lot of good humor.
Well, great humor, and there were elements of sort of quietly going about the business of teaching subversion.
Okay. And I can remember when I would bring it home, my dad would pick it up sometimes, and he would just laugh, and he enjoyed it with me, too. And, you know, he didn't have the same attitude that your dad did, I don't think, but he thought it was kind of funny. However, as I progressed through the years, I began, when I'd stay home for the weekend, bringing home a couple other magazines, and one that really got his attention was the one by Crumb, the guy who narrated the ones with Mr. Natural and Kathy Tufbun.
Oh, yes, Crumb, yeah.
Oh, Lord. He picked that one up, and he put it down after about 5 minutes. He said, what kind of mind has created this type of stuff? And 5 minutes later, he said, you didn't bring home any more, did you?
Was that in the way of, do you have any more, or?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And it was just...
And then, I mean, there was a great the other great subversive comics, I think, of Zippy the Pinhead.
I don't remember him, but I mean,
a minute. No, you got to be. Wait. How did you miss Zippy the Pinhead?
I'm afraid, sir. Not so. I wish I could. I wish I could plead guilty, but I can't.
It wore a yellow moo moo clown suit with a pointed head with a little pink bow on the top, and was always seen saying either yow or are we having fun yet?
You know, Bob, I don't remember, and I can't pretend that I did, really. I really don't. But after that, along with Crumb, was another magazine that I subscribed to called High Times.
Oh, well.
I believe you.
Talk about it. Talk about a centerfold.
Oh, yes, sir. And so the only thing my dad could say, because he liked, I think, to prowl around and look and see these things, he said, hey, for God's sake, don't tell your mother, or don't let her find this. And I said, yes, sir. And I can remember a lot of good times with that. I remember when they even had a centerfold, not centerfold, but a page with a plastic record put on the page, 45 RPM, and you could tear it out and carefully, on the perforated edges, put it on your photograph record with the 45 attachment and play it. It had all kinds of wild stuff over there.
Well, you're gonna have to go and do a little homework, Jim, and look up Zippy the Pinhead, because somewhere, perhaps in a foggy haze, I can't imagine that you didn't see him, because, I mean, the quotes... all life is a blur of Republicans and meat. You know, damn.
Okay.
Bill Griffith wrote it.
Okay, I'm going to have to take a look at that and see what I can find out. However, this business about jumping from one thing to the other, Mrs. Trump, do you really think she may have tried to off herself?
Well, I mean, there's just, I mean, look, I mean, I don't want to be that program, Jim.
Oh, no.
But when the doctors say that the procedure that she had is either outpatient or overnight, under almost any circumstance,
they're out the next day.
And when the White House is all tight-lipped about it and says, well, you know, HIPAA keeps us from being able to say anything about her condition, that's bullshit, okay? That is evasion. I mean, it doesn't pass the smell test, Jim. Now, did she, you know, maybe she had a terrible case of the flu, whatever. But it was just all of a sudden, boom, done. And it comes a week after her Be Best campaign. Maybe she had a breakdown. Maybe they had to adjust her meds.
Remember, a couple of programs back, I was talking to you about New York back in the disco days at Studio 54 and Regine's.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing two men in Studio 54 one night. One had blonde hair, and it was Donald Trump. And he was surrounded. And I do remember Scott mentioning this book about Roy Cohn called Citizen Cohn. And Roy Cohn was at his side, and they were behaving outrageously. Of course, you could do that then. And I'm not sure if, yeah, that was Studio 54, because he was their lawyer. And he got them some real nice gifts, like a year and a half at Maxwell Air Force Base. And the other guy had totally white hair, very distinguished man. And I saw the back of his head, and he turned, and it was Cary Grant.
Son of a gun.
With heavy rim dark glasses, with heavy rim regular glasses. And he had an interesting history, too, of his use of LSD and stuff like that. But you can see a lot of stuff in New York, and Donald Trump was just getting his engine started. Because his behavior in those places, when I saw him with that coterie surrounding him, was totally and completely outrageous.
Well, let's understand. You know, he first hired Roy Cohn unnecessarily when he and his pappy got busted for racism in their landlord-tenant practices.
I remember that.
And all they would have had to do was sign a consent decree, and it would have been over, and legal fees or whatever, but instead he goes and hires Roy Cohn and makes the situation worse. You know, compare that with, say, the Giuliani situation.
Exactly.
But beyond being his lawyer, Cohn was also his, for want of a better term, guru. You could say that Roy Cohn taught Donald Trump to walk and talk and act just like a bloomin' lady.
Well, he did. And here's another story. And this was brought and it's referenced in that book about Cohn. And my buddy John said, I want you to call this number. And he said, but don't stay on too long. And it was Roy Cohn's personal number. He was listed. And he had an answer machine. And this is what it said. Hi, this is Roy Cohn, and if you don't leave an answer, I'm going to come get you. I heard that with my own ears. Not kidding. That was something else. But nonetheless, you've had a very good program, and I appreciate the stuff that you've shared, because I certainly shared it through my Facebook with a lot of people. And I don't care how many negatives or anything I get, at least it's my way of trying to make some kind of difference and, you know, hope that people will wake up and understand that they're just being taken for a ride.
Well, and again, we go back to what I was talking about with Kevin. That's the, you know, that's the billion-dollar question. You can't get people to wake up from being taken for a ride who wanted to go on the ride in the first place, Jim.
That's very true. And we have seen how this you know, has worked throughout history, particularly with the 70 years of our speaking tonight. And honestly and truly, it's just, I'm totally gobsmacked that the American people have been taken for that ride. But like I say, I blame the people who helped put him there, and the media, and they're dining out on all of his stuff. I mean, they just love all of the suspense that's being generated by what's going to happen next. Are they going to get him? Or here is Roy in Jerusalem. I mean, Donald in Jerusalem with son-in-law making the opening speech. I mean, that's all you hear. That's all you see. And I just wish that the Congress would have the same attention to detail, but with the right intention of doing what they were hired to do. I mean, it seems as though instead of the Congress running this country, it is the media. And everybody has just become so inured to it, they say, well, what else is going to happen? And that's very sad. It really is. Because we have a do-nothing Congress. I received a voter evaluation call on Sunday afternoon. This guy was asking about all these people. And this thing was just interminable. And I just told him, he asked me, with all these candidates, all up and down the list, well, how do you feel about this person? And the only thing I could say to this guy was, I wouldn't vote for him. And I finally told him, I said, buddy, I said, I'm going to make your job as easy as possible. I said, every 2, 4, and 6 years, you've got these candidates, particularly mostly Republicans, who get up there and are applying for their jobs by getting your vote. And as soon as they get into office, they go into the Forbidden City, and all they do is enrich themselves at the public trough like a bunch of pigs. And that's exactly what they are. I don't think I see one government official who is given any real publicity that I would open my front door for. I know back to the Dr. Bill show when Dem Leader came up here to Beckley. Bill asked me, he said, well, aren't you excited about the president being here? And I told him, I said, sir, if that man came to my front door, I would not even open it. And that's the way I feel now. That's bad.
I remember wanting to be subversive about that. And maybe it was a little bit prophetic, Jim, but I suggested we get a bunch of people together to put on sheets and pointed hats and hold up signs saying Klansmen for Bush.
I remember that.
It would have been premature, but now it wouldn't be subversive. It would just be, you know, some day that ends in Y with Trump, because again, David Duke endorsed Trump, and now David Duke is endorsing this Patrick Little creep in California.
That's the damnedest thing I've ever heard. That's the damnedest thing I've ever heard in my life. But to hear it verbatim as you played it, I mean, it sounded like something from either Dr. Goebbels' desk or from that magazine called Der Stürmer that was edited by Schreiker, who was also hanged at Nuremberg.
Yep.
For being the notorious anti-Semite. And when you hear that kind of stuff being played, and you can't find out who is responsible for it being played, as you pointed out, this secret type of freedom of speech, then that's when you have a malignancy, a cancer, growing in this country for which there is no real diagnosis, much less correction, if possible.
Well, since you've raised that issue, let's delve into it for a minute, because I got to thinking about it back in the context of the abject vulgarity of Don Blankenship's ads.
Oh, God.
and you probably saw some of them.
I did.
Well, I got to, and there's actually a story tie-in here, because Haley out in Arkansas posted something that I saw earlier today. A judge in Arkansas has granted a preliminary injunction restraining broadcast TV stations from airing a bunch of attack ads from a right-wing outfit that make arguably, demonstrably false claims against a candidate. And somewhere, somebody is pearl-clutching and hand-wringing about, ooh, the death of freedom of speech. But the problem is, well, okay, let me back up and see if I can loop this around and make better sense out of it. We have a line of cases out of the Supreme Court trying to address the issue of pornography.
Right.
And where pornography fits in the spectrum of free speech. Potter Stewart, the justice, once famously said, I can't tell you what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah, I know that.
So they came up, and I think Warren Berger wrote the opinion. He said, you know, it's obscene if it is absolutely lacking in political, social, or
social
artistic
value. Right. And it appeals to the prurient interests of a
exactly.
deviant group.
Exactly. And so that's a pretty tall mountain to climb in terms of proof, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, isn't it interesting that we have that tortured a degree of an attempt to understand depictions of sexuality, and yet at the same time we can't apply a standard like that to say the obvious attempts of Don Blankenship to leverage the nativist xenophobia that he knows lies nascent inside the West Virginia electorate. You see where I'm going, Jim?
Yeah, I do.
Because to me, it is far more obscene, and by obscene I mean lacking political, social, intellectual, or artistic value, and appealing to only the worst and most base instincts of the voters to try to get them to vote based on race or ethnicity, okay? I think that's obscene. But we can't constrain it, apparently. But it goes a little deeper than this. Because remember, Blankenship is affianced to an Asian woman.
Is what? I'm sorry?
He's affianced. You know, his
significant
other, girlfriend, fiance, is an Asian woman. So it was only his ads with China Person ads were nothing more than an attempt to appeal to the basest political, well, not even political, but the basest cultural biases of a certain segment of West Virginia voters. All of that having been said, and I come back to this because, well, you know, the primaries will end, and then we'll have general elections to deal with, and that'll get real shitty, as we found out.
I have no doubt.
But what responsibility do broadcast outlets bear in their decisions to air these things? And, of course, in West Virginia, we've got Sinclair Broadcasting, and we've got all these other corporate-owned TV stations. How much time do you reckon they spent trying to figure out if they should air Don Blankenship's ads? Because, see, broadcast outlets have sent ads back and said, we won't run this, it's too inflammatory. And they have the perfect right to do that, Jim.
Well, I hope so.
But Apparently in West Virginia, there wasn't so much as an eye batted. The only question asked being, hey, wait, he's spending his own money, right? Yeah. Check clear? Damn straight it did. Run it!
Well, there you go. Listen, may I interject one more comment, please?
Absolutely,
please. This morning, I had fallen asleep and I left the TV on. And I left it on one of the, I think, movie channels or something like that. And I heard all this, just screaming and carrying on and you know, being half drugged with sleep. I said, what in the world is this? And my God, right there on the TV was a porno movie with two couples, ugly as hell, in bed, doing the raw dog. And it sounded like something, I don't know.
Well, as they say down in the hollers, it beat cats fucking, didn't it?
No, it didn't. No, I mean, Bob, this was bad. But you know, I'm not trying to entertain anybody with that story, but it really happened. And when I saw that, I said, "What in the name of God is this?" Even on cable. I mean, I've never seen, and I've seen some nasty porno movies, and probably you have too in your time. All types. And, you know, we've all gone through the stages, though it never appealed to me. That's one thing. It never appealed to me was you know, people used to collect porn, and I said, you know, forget it. I don't need it. I've got my own porn, my experiences. But when I saw this, I said, oh, my. This is something I will not forget for a very long time. Now, this may not have anything to do with Don Blankenship, but even to me, and you know I am no prude. When I saw what I saw this morning, and having seen Don Blankenship's ads, I drew the line.
Well, which one was the more pornographic, Jim?
I can't really tell you. I think Don Blankenship probably was, to tell you the truth. Because I've never seen anything like that him before in my life. I mean, a convicted felon, he murdered so many people in that mind collapse and got off with no charge, no penalty really ever. And here he is running for the Senate and standing up there like he couldn't even read the prompting in front of him. And then he pulls those two girls with the blonde hair.
Who are, by the way, his granddaughters.
Yeah, right next to him. And they were looking at the camera like, you know, what is this? And I thought to myself, this isn't fantasy, Jim. You know, you haven't had too much to drink. You haven't had any real bad experience. It's, in fact, reality television. In which I guess because ever since January of 2017, we've had nothing but a complete and total overdose of reality television. I hope I've made sense enough for your program tonight.
No, you have. You've made plenty of sense. And, you know, I joked with Agnes while we were gone. I said, you know, it's Trump's world, and we're just living in it.
You got it.
And that's it's a gagging thing to come to realize, but damn. And I don't want to admit it, but
It's hard to imagine how this country.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I mean, how?
To me, Bob.
How does it end, Jim? I mean, I can't see. I mean, the Republicans aren't going to wake up.
Oh no, they're crapping in high cotton now.
You damn right.
I mean, you saw them up at the TV. On the TV was at the policeman's ceremony, and Trump was right up there with Pence, and he had the Speaker of the House up there with him, and oh, they were just putting on quite a show, and Trump was reaching for the family to come out on stage and just put his arm around them, just like other politicians that I've seen in the newsreels, if you know what I mean, and how they were projected to appear as loving families, loving this, loving that, loving animals, being portrayed as just real nice guys who've done so much. But it's all just the big lie. And that's what this whole administration is underpinned by. It's the big lie that's been so enlarged and made so large and big that people say, it's got to be true. Because I couldn't believe anything that big could be a lie. Because you know who said, you got to tell that big lie. Because if you don't tell a small lie, you'll get caught. Because everybody tells those small lies. But if you tell that lie big enough and long enough, people go believe it. And we know who we're talking about, don't we?
We most assuredly do.
And that, my friend, is all I had to say. I didn't mean to take up as much of my
time. Oh, it's quite all right. It was a lovely conversation. How's Patches fitting in?
Patches is trying to get used to a new home. She is 5 or 6, and her family had to jettison her because they were afraid that she was going to scratch one of their little kids who really does not know how to deal with a cat. And he kept teasing her and was getting scratches. And they were afraid that they took the little boy to the doctor and scratches. The doctor called the social sciences, or not social sciences, but you know who, the people of social welfare or something. You know, every time a kid comes in there and has undetermined types of scratches and stuff like that.
Child Protective Services, sure.
Yeah, they will. As a matter of fact, my mother tried to get a dog, and the dog was real rambunctious. It would jump up and down on her. Being at her age, she would bruise very easily. And my sister took her to the doctor for a physical, and upon examination, the doctor comes out and asks to speak to my sister, and he said, I'm going to have to report your mother to social services, because how are her relationships with her husband? And my sister said, not too good. He's been dead 5 years.
Sorry.
Really?
Sorry. No, I know, but...
Yeah. And, you know, that dog kept jumping up and down, and I said, Mom, I said, look, you know, maybe he is a little too young and is too rambunctious, and he might knock you down. And she had to get rid of the dog. But for the same thing, Patches is great as long as she can hear me open that can of food. And I sent you her picture, so she's quite a lady.
Well, good. I'm glad she's settling in, Jim.
I do, too, because it was really, that thing with Rufus just about took me in. It really did.
I know.
Because the two of us have been through so much together. So much. And right now, his ashes are in my family plot.
Nice. Very nice. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care.
You too, sir.
Bye now. A couple of good conversations to round out the program this evening. And so we come to the end of the program with still a $20 challenge on the table, courtesy of Charlene. And no responses to it yet, so maybe that'll happen in the next couple of minutes. Thank you, Charlene. And remember, if someone does respond to her $20 challenge, she's going to bump it by another $25, and that would be a huge help in bringing us down under the $200 mark for fundraising, so it won't be quite so brutal when we're passing the plate tomorrow on prayer meeting Wednesday. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation we have in this community. Thank you to all of you, a significantly smaller number, who keep the program on the air. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and to Steve. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working members, the hardest-working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Good news. Thank you very kindly to Mike in Cascadia, who says, I'll meet Charlene's challenge. Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much indeed. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.